Welcome back to season two of Blazing Trails. I'm Sabrina Barakzai, social and content marketer for Salesforce Strategic Events. We're sharing stories that reach beyond the tech industry. So no matter your career, location, or interests, we aim to curate a podcast that speaks to you. Today, we are talking about making room for equality. We all have a journey, we all have a story, and we all should be inspired to share our journeys. During Dreamforce 2017, we were lucky enough to welcome two amazing Hollywood actors who are changing the face of entertainment, questioning the status quo, and bringing their own unique flavor and experience to the table. What does it take to have those uncomfortable conversations about diversity, equal pay, and more? We're listening in on respective sessions with Hollywood actors Taraji P. Henson and Natalie Portman for their take on making room for equality. Oscar nominee and Golden Globe-winning actress Taraji P. Henson is changing the face of entertainment through powerful roles in Hidden Figures, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, and Empire. Taraji has helped to tell untold stories and has paved the way for people of color in leading roles on screen. Hear how she overcame obstacles, battled stereotypes, and has been an advocate for changing the narrative on and off screen by being her authentic self. Taraji spoke with Michelle Norris, founding director of the Race Card Project. Take a listen.
So you are a trailblazer in the truest sense.
Yeah, I hope so.
Whether you're playing Cookie or Katherine Johnson or Shug or Yvette or Biella in all of your films.
You know all
I
of
do,
them.
I do. I have, and it wasn't just because I looked at IMDb. I've been following you for a long time.
Oh, thank
or,
you.
Or Queenie in The Curious Life of Benjamin Button. You have, as I said, used your voice to lift up people. You use your voice to make sure that the storylines that are covered in the TV shows and in the movies reflect the lives of women. And I don't know if you all know this, but 23 million people watch you every week on Empire.
I hope so.
And every show generates almost 400,000 tweets. So you're in the middle of this big and robust and yeasty conversation. Mm-hmm. But you've always used your life and your roles as a trailblazer. And this conference is called Dreamforce.
Yes.
Because they want people to think about their dreams and how you support your dreams. Mm-hmm. If you can dream it, you can achieve it. And throughout your life, you've had people who have supported you, but you've also had people who've tried to tell you that you can't do certain things.
Those are my favorite people.
They're your favorite
people. That's my ammunition.
Okay, say more.
I mean, I love when people doubt me. I'm still fighting. I'm still trying to prove that, you know, women can do the same thing that things that men can do in this industry. You know, I just turned 47 this year, and you know, I'm so sick of in this industry when women become a certain age, it's like, oh, she's too old. But when you're a man, you can shoot, you can be a superhero, you can have a fat gut, a receding hairline, crooked teeth. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But when it comes to us, we have to be picture perfect and we have to be the right age. Well, what is that? You know, what is the right age? I don't know what that is.
And the right age is the age that you are.
Right.
Right?
Exactly. That's how I see life. That's why I don't, I've never been ashamed of saying my age, because I think we need that representation as women. You know, we're so busy going, oh, that, don't ask me my age. Yeah, ask me my age. I made it 47 years, and guess what? Some people didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, so be proud of that.
Right.
But at the right young age of 47, I took on my first action role, Proud Mary. It comes out. And so we just recently had to do reshoots. And it's all about changing the narrative. Once we change the narrative, then I won't look like a unicorn. So now, you know, you have these people around the monitors, and I'm doing literally my stunts, my own stunts. I'm, you know, the ones that they felt safe with me doing, and which was pretty much all of them. But, you know, I hear them around the monitor, oh, can you believe she's 47? Oh, my God. Change it to a man. Would they be saying that?
No.
So why is it that I'm a unicorn? If I can move, jump, cartwheel, backflip, why can't I have the part? What does age have to do with performance? So we about to crack the ceiling open with this one. And so that is has been my mission because I've had to fight so much, and I'm still fighting, still proving that I'm box office worthy. Pay me my money up front, you know? So it's always a fight, but I understand that, so I don't expect it to be easy. I wake up every day ready for the fight. Right? So I'm waiting to meet the naysayers. I can't wait to prove you wrong.
And that started early, because when you were at Howard, you had your son while you were in college, and some of you said, well, that, you know, maybe you should think
they thought I was over.
Step away.
That's
and
it.
You graduated. You carried him on your hip.
Not only did I graduate, I didn't miss a beat. I mean, I literally spit him out. I think I stressed him out because I had like this 75-page paper due the night before I went into labor. And I literally was in having labor pains as I was dropping off my projects. And I went to the hospital, had him. I worked with, after I spit him out, I healed about 2 weeks. And then I was in the hood working with at-risk students, teaching them arts, teaching them how to believe in themselves through art and poetry, find self-esteem. You know, here I am, a single mother barely making it. But that's my mission in life. Like, I feel like God put us all here to figure it out. He made us all look different. He made us all come from different backgrounds so that it wouldn't be easy, so that we could figure it out. And we better damn well figure it out.
Yeah.
Because it's not looking real good right now.
Right.
But it's up to us. It's up to us. We hold the power. We hold the power. You know, so that's always been my mission in life. How can I help? Because I feel like that's what God put us here for. He didn't set me up for all of this success for me to keep it to myself. That's selfish. Mm-hmm. Whose life am I going to change?
And when you went to Hollywood, you were 25. Is that correct?
26. Mm-hmm.
And then even then people were saying, well, in Hollywood you got to pop it before you got to, you know.
Oh yeah, they told
you
me
you got to develop a marquee
name. If you
name
don't pop before
22.
25, then you don't have a career. So you're telling me I'm not gonna make it before I even try? Like, no, get out of here. I just never. I always danced to my own drum beat. I was never afraid to take risks. I was just never afraid. I don't know. I guess a lot of people say coming from D.C. I know. Have you ever been to Washington, D.C.? It's a feeling there. I mean, when I was growing up, there was this feeling that everybody was a star. I guess because we have our... I'm trying to make you understand where it could possibly come from. I think most of it comes from my parents, my dad telling me that I was the best thing in life. And he didn't teach me conceit, but he taught me to believe in myself no matter what. So if you believe in yourself, you don't care. I really never cared about what other people thought.
Well, you know, in D.C. also, D.C., people know official D.C. You know D.C. You know the D.C. of the monuments and the people who make laws. But outside of
D.C.,
there's this culture. And go-go culture had a lot to do with that.
Go-go. We have our own music.
If you don't know go-go, right. We're going to take you to school for a minute. You need to understand go-go. It's this music that has this special kind of syncopation.
That's where I was going.
And it was something that grew out of indigenous soil. They made it themselves, and they made their own path.
Exactly.
And there are so many people that I've interviewed over years who come from D.C. Mm-hmm. who said that if Chuck Brown can create his own path, you know, come out of jail, creating music, becoming an international superstar, not because a studio tapped him on a shoulder, but because he designed his own sound.
His own sound.
That influenced you too.
Then he influenced the babies coming up, the boys banging on buckets on the corner. That started Backyard Band.
I know some of you are out there Googling go-go.
Google it, but I'm telling you, that is where it comes from. That's where, you know, I'm a superstar. Like, I grew up watching boys bang on buckets become something. You know what I mean? And so if I can see you do that, then how come I can't believe in my dreams? I grew up in this culture, so it was an invincible culture. I mean, sometimes people in D.C., they go, Denzel, so? Like, I mean, literally, that's the mentality, because a lot of the people in D.C. believe they're superstars, you know? So I come from that culture. I come from that, you know, you can, you know, we had D.C., our mayor, Mayor Marion Barry. Yes, kept me out of the streets. He implemented a program called the summer school. There it is, DC Summer Youth Work Program. Right. So in the
thank you, my sister.
Well, anyway, well, what it is you had a job in the summertime, so you wasn't out in the street doing things you didn't have
every
no business
doing.
Every young person had a job. If you wanted a job, you could go get a job. Government, any field you wanted. They had one for the arts. We used to do shows in the streets. I mean, you know, we did everything for the arts. So that's, I grew up in a culture when people cared about the youth. Mm-hmm.
You know. So I want to ask you about two roles in particular, mm-hmm. and they're recent. Cookie on Empire and Katherine Johnson in Hidden Figures.
Polar opposites.
And total opposites, but not really.
No.
Because in some ways, they're women who have to fight to make sure that people recognize their worth mm-hmm. and understand what they have to author. So I want to ask about Katherine Johnson first. How did that role come to you? Did you know that they were going to be casting for this role? Did you fight for that?
One job I didn't have to fight for. Theodore Melfi, our director, mm-hmm. He wanted to work with me on another project called St. Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. What's her name? The funny actress, Melissa
McCarthy.
McCarthy. So I was supposed to be in that, and it didn't work. They ended up going, they didn't want to cast the character black. Oh, it happens all the time. No, it was my win. So it did.
Because when it's right on time.
Because that didn't work out for a reason. And when Theodore Melfi, Ted, our director, was pissed because he wrote that role for me. He chased me for 2 years. And, you know, if you're an artist and you finally get there and I said yes and then politics killed his dream, he was mad about it. So then when he got Hidden Figures, he told the studio, I'm doing this movie with Taraji P. Henson, period. So that's how I got it. He called me and I just remember reading the script and I was like, is this real? Did this really happen? This is a great fiction. I like it. And he was like, no, this is actual facts. And I was like, then I got mad because I was like, well, people lied to me all my life and told me that math and science was for boys. I always remember in thinking back in school, you know, when you got older, you could pick your seat. I remember specifically math and science classes, I would always sit in the back because there was this universal understanding. No one ever said it to me, but it was an understanding that math and science is for boys. That's not for girls. So I had a low expectation of myself when it came to math and science. I would just sit in the back of the room. But imagine if I knew these women existed.
You know, when I saw that film, you and I have something in common. We both studied electrical engineering in college.
Yes.
And changed our majors. And I think it worked out fine for both of us,
yeah.
I'm not sure. But I would have made a fine electrical engineer because I was struggling myself. I'm not going to speak for you, but
I need to explain that. I'm not mathematically wired. And how I got into that was I didn't get accepted into the School of Fine Arts. A high school of fine arts. And when you're so young, that kind of rejection, you can't process. You just think, I suck. And I literally thought that. So I went to a regular high school, and I had a very smart girlfriend. She was really intelligent. And she wanted to go off to school for, you know, science and computers. And I was like, well, we hang out. I'll do what you're doing. So we enrolled at North Carolina A&T. Mm-hmm. And I failed. For the first time in my life, I got an F.
Okay.
And I've tried to fail classes because I was a class clown trying to be cool. Didn't fail because I couldn't. I was smarter than that, you know? And for some reason, that F was just like, I'm a failure. And I called my dad crying, and he was like, I told you, you're not supposed to be going to school for no math and no science. You're an actor. So being the great father that he was, may he rest in peace, he never forced his views and opinions on me. He just let me fall on my face on my own. So I needed that to happen because when I went to Howard University and I enrolled and I went for my dreams, I auditioned for, you know, the School of Fine Arts, and I remember my knees shaking and being afraid of that rejection again. And I remember Dr. Henry Edmonds, she's passed too, rest in peace. She auditioned me. She was the teacher of acting. And I remember her looking over her glasses. She said, "Young lady, what's your name?" And I'm shaking my voice. I was like, "Taraji Henson." And she was like, "You got something." She said, "And I'm going to tell you this. A lot of your friends you're going to hang out with and people you're going to meet in this department won't last." She said, "But you got something." And I'm looking at her, and that's all I needed. And I became a student of the arts. I never went to homecoming. Because you got to understand, that was a dream that I thought I didn't have anymore. And it came back to me, so it was like a second chance in life, and I wasn't going to fuck it up. So, yeah. So people to this day, they go, "Do you know so-and-so at Howard?" So-and-so, they think because you went to a HBCU, you know every person that went there. And I'm like, chances are, if they weren't in the School of Fine Arts, I don't know them. Because I was like this, head. My life revolved around the arts. I never stepped outside of that building unless it was go to the library to pick up a play or something. I was just immersed in the arts. I just never wanted to be rejected again.
I mentioned Katherine Johnson in electrical engineering, though, because when I saw the film, I wondered, had I known the story, if I had read Margot Lee Shetterly's book, might I have seen, oh, wait a minute, women do this kind of work.
Yeah, you would have had different
dreams. That's why I was so... I wanted to make sure young people, we arranged in Washington for a group of young girls to go see the film. Because I wanted
to see that. We pay for theaters. All the cast, we all pay for theaters in different, you know, urban cities that really needed it. We knew where parents couldn't afford to take their kids to theaters.
But I wonder if people in the Valley need to see that film also.
Yeah.
And understand the message.
Oh, absolutely.
Because in a place like this, where women are in the distinct minority, and when we talk about equality as something that we're all still struggling with, there are probably Katherine Johnsons in all kinds of organizations.
Absolutely.
Who are not able to shine as brightly as they can because they don't fit a mold, or because people don't necessarily see them as management material, or they don't see them as, you know, that's not what a coder looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's changing the narrative, you know, it's changing the narrative. Just like in my industry, you know, they like to say black movie this, black. Well, when you say that, stop saying that. Because when you say that, you make people who aren't black go, "Oh, well, that's not for me because it's a black movie." Who says on the weekends when you have time, "Hey, this weekend I'm going to go see a white movie." "Had some Chinese food last night. I think I'm gonna see me an Asian movie." Like, who does that? Right? "I'm gonna see a black movie. They got this real good black movie. Girl, you wanna go see this black movie with me?" You see the trailer, it either interests you or it does not, right? So why, when it comes to us, why is it called black? I hate that.
So when you do work, you want to make sure that it reaches the broadest possible audience.
It's a movie. It just happens to have some black folks in it. But it's good, you know? And I think that's what's happening, like, with Empire. Like, I knew it was going to be a hit domestically. Didn't see the international success. But that's my point. No one cared about black overseas. They just saw a family that they identified with. It had nothing to do with black. When I saw the headlines and they had that big fur, I don't wear fur, but you know, they put it on me. They photoshopped it on. In Russia, me and Lucius, none of the headlines said black. They just identified with these characters, and that's how it should be. But it's us that put these labels and titles on things. Why do we do that? Like, I'm sick of labels. Aren't we all human? Can we just leave it at that?
So, I understand that when they approached you about playing the role of Cookie, that you were...
I didn't want to do it.
Why?
Because I I just didn't want to do it. She scared me. I was like, she calls her son the F-bomb, and she beats one with a broom. I don't know if America's going to be able to take this. But for me, that's how I choose projects. If I'm not afraid, if it doesn't scare the hell out of me, then I don't need to do it. She scared me, so then that made me intrigued. So
she scared you because you were afraid the audience would react badly, or because you had to let that person inside you?
I thought the people was going to come after me, NAACP. I was like, oh, Lord, they're going to come down on me. They're going to say, why did you take this role playing this loudmouth woman? But then I shut the fear up. You know, you got to do that to fear. You got to tell that devil, go sit down somewhere. Get out of my head. You are nothing. You mean nothing. Stay under my feet. So then I got into the story, and then I started pulling her apart, and I said, this woman is something else. And I started seeing things that even the writers didn't see. Like, I grew up in the hood, right? I remember when crack was dropped off in the hood, right? I remember families being torn apart. I was in a broken home. By the end of the first year crack hit the hood, I was seeing kids who came from a house with both parents destroyed. They're knocking on my door asking me for T-shirts because they can't find their parents. You understand what I'm saying? So I understand when you play a character like Cookie, somebody who's so over the top, you have to handle that character with care, because if you don't play her right on, she becomes a caricature. Mm-hmm. So then once I understood her, I was like, well, then I have to play her, because not saying that any other actress couldn't do it. I just felt like it landed in my lap. It was my duty to bring her to life, because I felt like I could do it in a way that people will not judge her, but they will empathize with her. So let me play her need. Let me play what her struggle is. Her struggle at the time was to keep her three boys from being statistics, okay, right? And if that meant I take the fall for my family, then that's what I'll do. I'm not condoning that she and Lucius sold drugs, but if anybody is in here from the hood, when you ain't got no way, and that's your only way, and I'm still not condoning it, but when you give me an option, work at McDonald's for $3 an hour, or you can do this, and you can make $1,000 a week and feed your family, when your back is up against the wall, you make choices sometimes that aren't so conventional. But where I respected her is she chose to go to jail for her family. She did that. The writers didn't even catch it. I said, you got to understand the mind of a mother. This woman will give her life to keep her boys from being statistics. Three black boys from the hood not going to go to jail. They not going to sell drugs like me and their father did. They got caught. She took the fall. So why didn't Lucia?
The writers didn't even notice of the storyline.
They didn't see it. I took it to Lee. I said, isn't this interesting? Why didn't Lucius go to jail? Mm-hmm. They were both dirty. They were both outside counting the money. They were both selling the drugs and moving it. She chose to go to jail because Lucius had the talent. If the father of her boys went to jail,
yeah,
how was she going to feed her family?
And they
She didn't have the talent.
And the role model, having a male role model there in the house.
So she chose to go to jail. That's a strong woman right there. So I decided to play that. And every decision she makes come from that. And then what? The people got it. They understood. They understood her struggle, her passion. That's something you can get behind. But you can't get behind just some loudmouth, sassy woman. Nobody care about it. That's just noise. But it has to come from somewhere.
But
you know?
Noise is so wonderful.
It is. You know
it really
why?
Is.
Because it comes from somewhere. It's just not a loud, sassy. And see, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, she's just a loud, sassy black woman. Oh, God, I can't. But I found the humanity in her. And that's your job as an actor.
How much of that is improvised? How much do you bring to that? And how open was Lee to letting you do what you needed to do to stay in the role and to make the role your own?
They let me do what I have to do. Because what I'm not going to do, this is how my brain works. If I'm not passionate about it, if I don't believe in it, I can't say it. I can't speak on it. I can't put my name on it. That's how I'm wired. I'm a very passionate person. And I don't do deals unless I can get behind it. I don't care about your money. I'm gonna make money. I don't sell out to money. I have a conscience that deals with me, you know. So if it don't feel right, if it ain't right, I can't say it. And they know that about me. We just had an issue. I had to fight them so hard on trying to make this yo-yo with Cookie and Lucius. They make it a yo-yo, and it's like, I'm standing up for women here. I'm standing up for women who have been hurt by men, who have had enough and say, you know what? You hurt my heart. You don't protect it, so I'm going to protect it. And even in this relationship with Cookie and Lucius, as much as they love each other, at some point she has to stand up and say, you can't do this to my heart no more, man. You know? And so that's the fight I'm having with the right. They get it now. You know what I mean? But I have to stand up for that, because if I let them write it, she'll just be, every time he say, jump, how high, Lucius? Where you want me to be? Where you was just sleeping with Boo Boo Kitty. Y'all really gotta know that whenever I take a role, I'm fighting for the truth.
The last thing I want you to leave us with is a little bit of wisdom around this issue of equality.
Yes.
And diversity, and how we make the world a more equitable place. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we need new words. I don't know if you follow Tanneri Vidugue on Twitter or Instagram, but she is a writer and a professor, and she works primarily in science fiction. And she tweeted something the other day that really stuck with me. She said, you know, I'm tired of this word diversity when it comes to Hollywood in particular. She says, maybe we should just say reality. Mm-hmm. Like, let's create shows that reflect the world that we all live in. As you say, where people look all kinds of different ways. So do we need to think about sort of new words so that people take this perhaps to heart in a slightly different way?
I think if we just stop putting labels on things and just, you know, stop talking about it so much, you know what I mean? And just do it, you know? I make sure whatever project I do, I just make sure it's even. I make sure it looks like how it looks in this room. I mean, how it looks in the world, you know? I don't do shows, and I'm trying to get as many walks of life as I can, you know? Well, why does that character have to be that race? Why does it have to be a girl? You know, start thinking outside the box. So any project I get, that's how I'm thinking.
Want to experience the magic of Dreamforce but don't have a full conference pass? We are thrilled to invite you to register for a free Expo Plus pass for access to select events on Thursday and Friday at Dreamforce. Head over to dreamforce.com/free to register now. With a free pass, you'll learn about the latest innovations at select product and industry keynotes, test drive thousands of solutions, access hundreds of partners in the Customer Success Expo, and network with fellow trailblazers. Again, register at dreamforce.com/free, and we'll see you in September. Academy Award-winning actress, filmmaker, and humanitarian Natalie Portman is a trailblazer in Hollywood. Portman, known for her roles in V for Vendetta, Star Wars, and Black Swan, spoke about the pay gap in Hollywood and her own personal experience with pay disparity. After discovering that she was paid one-third of the salary as her male co-star, Portman began forging a path for equality and equal pay in Hollywood and beyond. At Dreamforce 2017, she spoke with Molly Ford, Director of Equality Programs at Salesforce, about how she is championing gender equality and equal pay for equal work in the film industry and blazing a path to equality for all. Let's listen in.
And speaking of, like, choosing your path, you graduated with a 4.0 and went to Harvard. That's an amazing path. Tell us about how that experience was.
It was really incredible, and I was lucky to go to school. Like, Facebook was created while I was a senior, so I got to go to school basically without social media, and I think that was a big deal as an actress to get to have that experience of just having a real college experience without people, like, taking pictures of me in class or, like, you know, writing about stupid things I said or whatever in a seminar.
Right.
And it was great. It was, I still, it's my best friends in the world are from school, and it gave me sort of this real foundation of people that I could continue learning from the rest of my life. And and also I think the courage to have a voice, because it was demanded from me for the first time, where people were like asking for my opinion on a regular basis.
That sounds important, that learning to have your own voice. And right now we're seeing in the news and in our both related industries, whether it's tech or Hollywood, we're seeing women find their voices. And so talk about what that means when you see people kind of stand up.
Well, it's been incredibly powerful, of course, these past few weeks and in my industry to see women and men come forward and voice their experiences that had previously been silenced. And they're incredibly brave. And I mean, I've heard well-meaning men in the past few weeks be like, they want attention or whatever. And it makes me so ill to hear that, because people who come forward with these kinds of things have nothing to gain and everything to lose by speaking up, and it's incredibly brave. And it's something that we really need to encourage and foster is women's voice and women's, particularly women, of course, everyone, but particularly women do not have the sort of practice as much as men do at an early age of being a boss and being an advocate for themselves and for the women around them.
Yeah, this morning we were talking about women being bossy, and I nicknamed it leadershipy. It's leadershipy.
Oh, yeah. Bossy. No, but I think bossy, we can also own being a boss, you know? We need, like, boss school for girls.
Right.
We do. It's because it's important. It's important to know what it is to ask someone in a direct way, in an unapologetic way, to do something because you are their superior, and to be Absolutely. Comfortable with that position. And that's, you know, it's absolutely an issue of opportunity for women, but it's also an issue of women having enough practice and confidence in doing so, which some women have and some women need help practicing because it hasn't been socially encouraged.
So what are those things in your journey that helped you find your voice? Were there events? Was it how you were raised? What are those things that helped you find that inner Natalie?
Well, directing was a huge deal and actually made me feel like it would be an incredible exercise for students. And I mean, maybe not directing film, maybe there's equivalents in other kind of arts or business models that we can give as sort of practice activities for young girls and women, because just the act of saying, will you please do this? Will you please do that? This is how I want this. This is, and a group of people who are your team. And obviously you can take turns in these groups of, you know, who's the boss to on different projects, so that people get the opportunity to practice being it, because it's a very powerful experience and you kind of have to experience it to know what that is, and to understand that the more clear you are, the more, because I feel like I always define myself as part of my identity as like, I'm easy, I'm nice, it took me so long to realize, oh, I want to identify myself that way because that's what is encouraged in women and that is what is applauded in women, is not to be difficult.
Right.
You know, I'm not difficult. Sure, whatever you want. You want me to do it this way? No problem. Like, where should we go for dinner? Whatever, you know, like, what color do you want this? Oh, it doesn't matter. And then when you're a director, everyone needs you. Or when Absolutely. You're the boss, everyone needs you to say, I want it this way. I want it that way. Because that makes their job easier to Absolutely. Have clear direction.
Great. I call that shot calling. I like that.
Yeah.
Go this way.
That it's not difficult. It's
right.
being direct.
Absolutely. So January 21st, 2017, you with thousands of other millions of women probably took to the streets to protest. Tell us what the Women's March was like for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was I'm sure many of you were there. It was so powerful and such an incredible moment for feeling that this moment in history is actually engaging us and inspiring us to stand up for what we believe in and recognize that the fight's not over and absolutely. Things that we might have taken for granted are not actually goals achieved and that we have to keep working and keep striving and keep fighting. And it was hopefully the beginning of a movement, it felt like, that day.
Did you ever feel like maybe you shouldn't speak out for gender equality, or maybe that's something you shouldn't voice? Did you ever fear it might hurt your brand or how people perceived you?
No, I didn't. I think the thing I've been sensitive about is I have a son and a daughter. And my son, when he sees, like, you know, the future is female t-shirts or whatever, he's like, what about me? And I think it's important to address, like, the future is all of us.
Right.
And we love men. We need to add seats to the table. We're not taking away seats. We need to include everyone. It's not, this is for the betterment of everyone's world.
We can identify with that. So as you, actress, mother, how are you approaching it all?
Well, I think that's, a lot of people have a hard time with women being asked these questions, but it's such a big part of working mothers' lives and uses such an enormous amount of mental energy. And I actually feel like it's a huge thing that in everyone's particular industry would be incredible for women to get together and almost train each other, and men welcome to participate too. And the more male involvement in parenting, the better it is for kids and mothers as well. But it takes such an enormous amount of mental energy to organize yourself. And it's so strange that, like, you go through all this schooling and no one ever talks to you about that. It's like, that's the only thing that would have been practical for my life. It's like that if someone could have sat me down and said, this is how you organize so that you have, like, food prepared before you go to work. And, like, you know, I mean, it's crazily simple stuff that it's like, I feel like I have to build this from scratch, and every woman I talk to feels like they have to also, and it seems like we can teach each other and help each other, and it's specific to industry, of course, because we all do different things. It's maybe not, I don't know if it's politically correct to be saying it, but I do think we need, like, training for how to be working mothers, the same way that, like, we might learn economics and no one's teaching us, like, how to invest in high school or something.
Right.
You know, like, it's giving you, like, a piece of the tools, but not the practical ones that will make your life better when you're actually a participant in the world.
Absolutely. So we had an interesting conversation about equal pay, and you know that Salesforce is known for having done an assessment, and we talked about it's a different context, maybe if you say an engineer, equal pay for equal work, but kind of give us your story and how you feel about the gender wage gap.
Well, it's obviously a huge issue in every industry, and is very different in film and for actors, because we're probably more akin to, like, sports athletes, because we are more commodities, and, you know, it's not like the longer you're working, the more valuable you are, or, you know, equal pay for equal work is, you know, it has to do with how marketable you are, what kind of name you have, whatever. But the thing that I guess is consistent is that the methods in which the higher-ups calculate people's wages is not transparent, and also for film is not really methodical. It's a little bit like, what do you think this person's worth? I'd say about this based on whatever I think of their last few films that have come out and the success. So it's a different issue, again, for every industry, and needs to be addressed as such per industry, but is incredibly important to address, because we need to reach a point where we're all looked at as people and not by gender, and obviously just kind of get beyond gender.
Absolutely. So one of the things you're working on philanthropically is about microfinance. Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about that and why that's important to you.
Well, microfinance, for those many of you probably know, is a concept where you putting giving a small investment to a woman, primarily women's businesses in developing countries, and then it has all of these sort of trickle effects of, you know, they end up having better housing, better education for their children, better health care, later age when they have their first child. And so basically you can really have this incredible effect in a community. And the women, they form village banks where they insure each other. And if someone doesn't make back their loan, it's because they pay back their loans, they insure each other, and they put social pressure on them to, that's what kind of is the collateral, is that they, as a group, ensure that all of the investment will be paid back. And it's been incredibly successful and has been really rewarding to be part of. For many years, I've worked with a group called Finca, and that's been really incredible to get to meet women who are part of this and just working so hard and so engaged by the opportunity.
What spawned that in you? What made you want to start giving back and kind of going on this journey for equality?
Well, being from Israel, I think I've been unfortunately exposed to this long-standing, not unfortunately that I was exposed to it, but exposed to this unfortunate conflict my whole life. And when I started looking into it, I reached out to Queen Rania of Jordan, which was very lucky that I had access to meeting her, and who's, of course, an incredible, one of the most high-profile Palestinian women in the world, and wanted to reach out about working together on something. And she said, well, it's not, more than anything, it's hope gap, that there's this economic difference that creates despair in the Palestinian community. And I said, well, what do you think is the best remedy? And she introduced me to microfinance. So that was sort of how I got directed to that and understood that so many of these political conflicts are actually economic conflicts at their core and then manifest in different ways.
So let's go back to your Harvard commencement speech, much that you remember. You talked about owning your own meaning, and I interpreted that as kind of defining yourself. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that?
Well, I think that so many, especially people who maybe are good at getting good grades, because I feel like, you know, we define people as like smart or successful or whatever, but you're like, there's a type of person who might be like obedient and good at getting grades, or that might be
you
the type
that,
of person.
You had a 4.0 and you went to
no,
Harvard.
No, but I feel like you, it doesn't, you get to a place like Harvard and you're like, oh, some of these people are really special and some of these people are good at following rules. I follow into the latter category, you know, and there's a moment which, I don't know, sometimes I'm like, is this obvious to everyone else and just took me a really long time to figure out, but that it's not about pleasing someone else, it's not about getting a grade for someone to pat you on the back, which is also, I think, a female, very female, socially constructed female behavior to be like pleasing someone. But it's about finding your path and your meaning and what's meaningful to you. And we're really at a moment too in our country where I think there's a crisis in meaning. You know, there's a crisis in knowing what is your core and what matters. And it's, you know, we've got just the rampant we're in an addict country. We're addicted to our phones. We're addicted to our binging TV. We're addicted to opioids. We're addicted to news coming in violently on your phone, like just an onslaught. We're all addicts. I'm an addict. And we have to, like, the antithesis to that addiction is meaning.
Right.
Finding what is meaningful, like fostering the time that you spend with someone you love that's not on a phone, time that you spend doing something, creating something beautiful, doing something that means something to you at your core. And it seems like the only antidote right now to, I mean, we all have addict brains that are so easily snapped. And, you know, I think every industry has learned from tobacco that you get people addicted and you make money, you know. So we've become slaves to all of this technology, and actual addictive substances in this country. And it's changing everything. And meaning seems to be, you know, your personal core meaning seems to be the antithesis of that.
That's powerful, your core meaning. So we're telling everyone to join us on this path to equality and be equality trailblazers. How do you suggest people go about this life of trying to find that meaning to be passionate and do something with purpose?
Well, in terms of equality, I think that we need to change the conversation in a lot of ways. I mean, I keep hearing people being like, I care about women, I have daughters, or I would never stand for that if someone did that to my girlfriend or my wife. And you're like, this should be because we're people. I mean, I respect that. I know you're well-meaning, but like, this shouldn't happen. Even if I'm not someone's daughter and I'm not someone's wife or girlfriend, like, you should respect me. I'm not someone's property. That it's like respect me because I'm the property of a man in some way. Or related to a man in some way. And I think we need to be looking at everyone as humans. It's not, you know, because, you know, I have a gay cousin, so I feel for gay, it's a person. Like, feel for them because they're a person. They deserve to be treated with full dignity and full opportunities, just like everyone else. And then the other thing I keep hearing a lot is, like, we want to hire these people, but they don't exist. Like, we don't have people who have any experience being on boards, or we don't have people who are experienced being like electricians on a movie who are female. And you're like, maybe it's because you didn't give them a chance, and maybe you need to give, like, they're not going to ever get the experience if they don't get the job first. Like, how did all those men on your board get their first job on a board? Like, you have to give people their first chance, and you have to mentor people and let people apprentice. And like, if you're serious about having 50-50 men and women in the near future, which I think many of us are talking about in the next 7 to 10 years, and not just men and women, also people of color, which will be 50% of our population by, what, 2040, I think, something like that. Also LGBTQ community, also people with disabilities, which I'm not sure if that's the correct term. I'm sorry. But, I mean, we need to create a community in every industry that looks like the world, that looks like, you know, we can't be, it can't continue the way it's been going on. So it seems like per industry, people need to have the conversation. How do we train this generation, the next generation, so there are people at every level that you can be like, hire that person, hire that person, hire that person, and give people their first chance.
This podcast is brought to you by Dropbox. Dropbox is a leading global collaboration platform that's transforming the way people and teams work together. As a strategic partner, Dropbox is working with Salesforce to reimagine the work experience, building new solutions that eliminate disruption and help teams collaborate across sales, service, marketing, commerce, and more. Learn more at dropbox.com. Next time on Blazing Trails, we're talking about leadership. Today's world is increasingly geared towards authentic leadership. What are some ways we can all demonstrate leadership at work? Join us for an exciting conversation with top leaders from various industries. Thank you again for joining us on Blazing Trails. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and keep up with exclusive content from trailblazers around the world.